I'm Bill Barole. Over the last few decades, I've done every kind of writing there is to do, from journalism to humor, books, movies, and television.
I'm Matt Ricardo. For the last 30 years, I've toured the world as a variety performer.
We've come together across the Atlantic to talk about creativity, what it is, where it comes from, why it matters.
Thomas Edison said, "To invent, you need a good imagination and a pile of junk."
This is Imagination and Junk, a conversation about the hard work of creativity.
Episode 20, Brigadoonish. Dear Bill, being an independent creative is brilliant. You get to have notebooks, sit in coffee shops, tell people you're working on some things, ignore the lack of money, sit in coffee shops, get scared you'll never have any more ideas ever, sit in coffee shops, cry. The point is, it's brilliant. But the flip side to this artistic paradise of a life that you've crafted for yourself is that if you actually manage to make anything that you think might be of some quality or worth, then you have to find ways to show it to people. I joke about it, but I do truly love what I do. Over the last few years, thanks to a pandemic, my fear of inevitable death, antidepressants, and the encouragement of a variety of people, including my partner in this podcast, I've managed to widen the scope of the kind of things I make. My main thing is still larking around on stage, but I now consider myself also a writer, a filmmaker, a photographer, and a podcaster, and that feels good to say out loud. It still feels a little bit untrue, but I'm working on that. It's a really nice luxury to be able to have an idea and then consider which medium would be best for it. But once I've made something in whatever form it ends up taking, my job changes yet again, as it does for everyone who wants to get reputation or an audience or, perish the thought, even money for their work. At that point, I have to stop being an artist and move into the world of marketing, advertising, publicity. So this week, we're going to be talking about self-promotion. Oh God, it's hellish. I think it might actually be the hardest part of the whole damn process. I don't know if this applies to all artists, but certainly in my brain, it takes the vast majority of my mental bandwidth to summon up the confidence and self-belief to be making things in the first place. But then, to pop my head into the world of other people, to clear my throat and say, I made a thing? Maybe you'll like it or something? Please have a look? Oh God, the fear of universal, international, global, intergalactic rejection is very real. But I'm a professional, not a hobbyist. So finding ways to seduce as many people as possible into seeing my work isn't an ego boost. It's how I pay the mortgage. So it's got to be done. The trick is to find ways to do it that leave both me and my potential audience not feeling awkward and cheap. I've been doing this for a while now, and I think I had a head start. My years as a street performer taught me not to be too embarrassed about blatantly commodifying my work. You do a street show, and then, toward the end, you look these strangers in the eye and ask them to give you money for it. You learn how to ask, and the secret is pretty simple, or at least the method I've always used is honesty. You tell the audience that this is your real full-time job. You tell them that you love it and hope they did too, but that you can't pay the rent with applause. And you let them know that if they want to see your show again, or any show, or if they want other people in the future to see your show, then the only way to make that happen is to pay for the one they just watched. And then you tell them how much you want. And finally, you say that if they can't afford to pay, it's fine. You know what it's like to have no money. Those that pay, pay for those that can't, so we all get a good time. As Celeste Holmes said, honesty, that's the thing. Once you can fake that, you've got it made. Except it's not fake. All of that is true. There's no clever psychology, no tricks. Good art is about authenticity, and people do, I think, respect you for sharing that truth. So, when I share the things I've made online, and let's face it, we're almost entirely talking about online promotion here. I mean, me and Bill aren't standing outside subway stations handing out flyers for the podcast. So, when I share things online, I try to do something more than just, here's a new thing, go watch it. I'll try and talk about why I made it, what it means to me, how the process of making it was. Or maybe I'll give a fun little detail about it. Maybe something funny happened while I was filming it. Maybe it was something I wrote while travelling somewhere interesting. By the way, I'm writing this sitting in a dressing room in a theatre in Chelmsford, England, which might sound exciting and showbizzy if you don't know what a Chelmsford is. In Austin Kleon's book, Show Your Work, he argues for, well, showing your work, but especially when it's not finished. Showing the actual creative process rather than just the finished work feels like an honest and effective way of letting people connect with the artist. It shows how ideas can evolve, change completely, fail, and get dumped. It also shows that this stuff is work and you're trying, which, you know, is a good thing to share. Kleon uses the phrase, become a documentarian of what you do, which feels like an interesting way to think about creative work. Okay, look, I feel bad about dissing Chelmsford. I've just come off stage and they were absolutely delightful, and they roared with laughter when I called them tawdry Essex scum. Love you, Chelmsford. So, is there a way of self-promoting while still being an honourable, authentic artist? Or are all these methods just versions of, you know, advertising? Because whatever route we take, I guess the bottom line is always basically like, share and subscribe. So, like, share and subscribe. And Bill, I'll talk to you soon. Matt.
Dear Matt, I have, on your recommendation, started watching the venerable British comedy drama Minder, which I have to say right at the start, I'm enjoying very much. For listeners on this side of the Atlantic, Minder, which was mostly produced in the 80s, tells the story of two guys, a shady used car dealer named Arthur, and his pal Terry, an ex-boxer he hires to watch his back. Terry's a big lug with a soft heart and a code of honor, despite his work, and Arthur is kind of a wide boy, which is a fantastic piece of British slang I try to work into the conversation at any available opportunity, even if those opportunities are few and far between in America, and oh boy are they ever. Anyway, Arthur and Terry are charming guys, and the series tells the extended story of their picaresque adventures in the London, well, not quite the underworld, but a world that's on the fringes of the legit one. I bring this up for two reasons. One, I spent $12 on the season one boxed set of the DVDs, a sum which is now, thanks to the U.S. tax code, deductible. And two, I have a question. Did Arthur and Terry have to promote themselves? And if so, how? In the way of a bygone style of TV storytelling, the show doesn't do what over here is called a premise pilot. That is, there's no backstory provided. You're just dropped into Arthur and Terry's story in progress. So you never really get to see, how does a hustler get the word out? How does Muscle for Hire do it? In the second episode, Terry is tasked with babysitting a guy who's on the run from his criminal buddies. And when the guy gives Terry the slip, Terry is upset about it for two reasons. He's conscientious, to be sure, but also, and he explicitly makes this clear, there's his rep to consider. So, for Terry and for Arthur too, self-promotion is part and parcel of the job. It sounds like it is for you as well, I think. You started off by describing promotion not as something that's outside the job of being a creator, but a part of it. But then a bit later, you talk about the moment when the time comes to stop being an artist and move into the world of marketing. So for starters, I need to get clear on what we believe. Do we believe that self-promotion is woven into the job? Or can the job of artist effectively exist in the kind of rarefied air where marketing one's work is a grubby, distasteful prospect? I guess it's possible to be the second type of artist, but my guess is that the ones who inhabit that territory fall into one of two buckets. Artists who are so vastly successful they can leave the spade work to others, or artists who, how can I put this, starve to death. Let's assume, for the sake of argument, that you and I fall into neither of those buckets and are the kind of creative people who do consider self-promotion part of the job. But that doesn't mean we have to like it. It is, for me, as it sounds like it is for you too, the part of the job that absolutely sucks. I have no feel for it. It isn't in my skill set. It's pain. You may have a leg up on me in this regard. As you noted, when you start out as a street performer, the ask is inextricably part of the art, and the prospect of rejection is inevitably part of the ask. So you, I'm guessing, get used to it to some degree? But I'm also guessing that the kind of rejection you had to face when somebody stonily passed the hat without putting any money in didn't fully prepare you for the scale of rejection you face when you do your marketing on the internet, as most creative types now do, as we do, in promoting this project. The great thing about distribution getting unshackled from the old gatekeepers is that it is now literally both global and easy. You can push a button and your product is available all over the world instantaneously. That's pretty remarkable if you think about it. And I think we may have gotten a little jaded about how remarkable it is, what a massive paradigm shift it was when it started to happen in the 90s. So that's been the good news, and it is very good news indeed. The problem is, it's also the bad news. When the barriers come down and everyone has a channel, when everyone is a publisher and a broadcaster, well, everyone will publish and broadcast. And the tide of stuff, just stuff, that's available to every consumer will so overwhelm the individual capacity of any single consumer to parse it all that it amounts to just a different kind of barrier. This, of course, makes self-promotion much more important, but it also makes it so much harder. The question becomes, how do you reach through that wall of overload and, even if it's just for a second, grab the attention of the people you want to reach? You asked a question. Is there a way of self-promoting while still being an honorable, authentic artist? Yes. At least there's a way to try. And you hit on it yourself. This is what I believe. The way to break through is to offer the possibility of real human connection. You and Cleon say, show your work. I say, be recognizably human. I think these amount to the same thing. Frailty, doubt, confusion, hurt. These are the hardest things to put into your work, especially if you're a person who, and I think we both are, doesn't like to expose too much of what's lurking around under the surface. It feels a little showy. Inappropriate, maybe. Uncomfortable sometimes. But if you want to make contact, which is in the largest sense what art is for, you have to first establish your bona fides as a human. You have to say, I'm standing here, and this is what I feel. And you're going to understand this because it's what you feel, too. This is a big ask. Art is a big ask. But if it doesn't ask, what's it for? Chew on that one, and I'll talk to you next time. Bill.
Dear Bill, oh God, I love Minder. I grew up in a very working class area of London in the 70s and 80s, and Minder is exactly how it looked and felt to me. I knew all these people. They were just as twinkly-eyed, funny, dodgy and dangerous as they are in Minder. As the inhabitants of my childhood might say, they're all right Chinas to get a Brahms with, but if the filth give you a butcher's, they might not stick their Gregory out for you without a bung, do you know what I mean? I think, and I'm not sure if it's ever stated or just implied, that after prison, Terry worked as a doorman, and that's when his talents came to Arthur's attention. Long story short, Terry's a handy when there's a Barney on the job. Any road up. Back to the what's name we're talking about. You ask if self-promotion is inherently part of the job of being a creative, and as I see it, the answer is right there in the question. It is, if being a creative is your job. But being a creative isn't a job. I mean, of course it can be, and it is to us, but as we've talked about in past episodes, it's more than that. It's a way of thinking, a way of perceiving, passing, and interacting with the world around you. It's a way of being. Self-promotion is part of being creative, only as much as capitalism is part of the nature of art, which is to say, it can be, but it doesn't have to be, and it often isn't. We wouldn't speculate on whether marketing is inherently part of, say, cooking, or whether self-promotion is baked into the study of the clarinet. But if you want to make money from your cakes or your music, then you are probably going to have to engage with it on some level. But do we stop being artists when we start marketing our art? Well, not if we're smart. Marketing is not art, but it is possible to do it artistically. It's possible to do most things, arguably everything, artistically. And if you're working on ways to promote your artistic work, it makes sense to use the skills and talents you're trying to sell the skills and talents that you're trying to sell. Did that make sense? And as you so rightly say, that won't always be pleasant. Whenever I have something to show people, a YouTube video, a live date, whatever, I'll be neck deep in doing all I can to draw it to people's attention. All the time thinking to myself, oh, this is not what I signed up for when I decided to be an artist. But of course, it totally is. Or at least once I decided that I'd like to show people what I make, and especially once I started doing this stuff professionally for money. That icky feeling? I think it might be capitalism. And you're right. My background as a street performer and my current life as an online content creator, oh God, please just give me a second to slap myself around the face after using that phrase, means it feels, I guess, easier to me. I don't feel massively awkward about yelling into the wilds of the internet that I made a thing. Apart from anything else, experience has taught me that the people most likely to hear that yell are those that have already showed interest in me and might, in fact, actually want to see what I made. It took a long time for the low self-esteem to grudgingly accept that, let me tell you. Bottom line, though, is that someone walking away from a street show without putting money in the hat really doesn't hurt that much at all. About half the audience always do that, so it's no surprise. Someone choosing to get some money out, come forward with a smile and a thanks, drop it in my hat, will always mean more, because that's the harder, cooler thing to do. I never had the biggest street show, but I like to think it was pretty good, original and fun. And once you learn the basics of online promotion, that to get big numbers, the quality of your work is nowhere near as important as putting it out regularly, keeping it to certain lengths, and ideally contributing to the lucrative Nazi memorabilia unboxing livestream market, big numbers start to mean less. Or at least, that's how it works for me. Honestly, whenever I hear someone talk about best practices for gaming the YouTube algorithm or whatever, my eyes start to glaze over. I mean, good for you, I guess, but it feels so much easier just to have a fun idea and make it mindfully and throw it out there to see if anyone likes it. Without wishing to sound too objectionable, I really would rather have 5 people that felt seen by something I made and clicked a thumbs up than a million people who clicked it because I found a way to fool some maths into putting it in front of their eyes. The sheer unimaginable size of the internet and the amount of content added to it every second means that it's both dumb and completely unworkable to have your goal just be sell to everyone. That's the bad news. But the good news is that this enormity means that you can carve out a small, more connected audience, which still has a good chance of being big enough to sustain your work. My feeling is, with any audience, a street show, online, wherever, it's more about how passionate they are about your work and how passionate you are about their attention than how many of them there are. Authenticity. Real authenticity. Humanity, even. So what I'm saying is, yeah, you are absolutely right. Show yourself. Your real, unsure, struggling with pride in your work, hopeful self. The absolute hands-down best way to get someone to care about the art is if they care about the artist. And one of the best ways to get someone to care about the artist is if the artist clearly cares about their audience. Not as potential customers, not even really as audience, but as people communicating with each other through artistic media. So, it seems we agree. But this episode still has a decent amount of time left, so it's time to announce the Imagination and Junk iPad Giveaway Sweepstakes. Simply share this episode with 1,000 friends, have them share it with another 800 friends each, and you could be entered into the prize draw to win up to one iPad. Terms and conditions apply. You must be subscribed to Imagination and Junk until your youngest child dies of old age. You must have downloaded all episodes 3 times. You must have left 5-star reviews for every episode. You must spend at least 7 consecutive Sunday afternoons at your neighborhood's busiest intersection handing out homemade flyers about this podcast. Symptoms may include dizziness, ankle fungus, and death. Seriously though, Bill, what do we do when we completely agree? Talk to you soon. Matt.
Dear Matt. Oh God. We're here, aren't we? We've arrived. We're talking about search engine optimization. Again, I think. I think we briefly touched down in the miasmic swamp of SEO in a previous episode, but I honestly don't remember because I have a self-defense mechanism in my prefrontal cortex, a sort of a kill switch, that shuts the whole works down when I get anywhere near the stuff. A decade or so ago, I wrote an anti-SEO screed for Forbes called Sex, Free iPad, Naked Pictures of Cat Deeley, 8 Ways to Get Rich Right This Second, and Lose Weight While You Sleep. The basic idea was that SEO is a short con. The hilarious irony of this, by the way, is that Forbes was, at that very moment, engaged in a transformation from venerable old media legacy title to race-to-the-bottom, click-chasing content farm, a transformation that caused me to shortly thereafter pull the ripcord and jump before the thing inevitably crashed and burned. The piece was a bonbon, nothing more, about 600 words in length. But it must have hit a nerve, because a guy who identified himself as the director of something called Search Engine Watch took enough umbrage to draft a multi-thousand word defense of SEO in reply. This struck me as what military planners call asymmetrical, but never mind. The point is, the guy failed to get the joke and responded in a way that was out of all proportion to it, because shrieky hypersensitivity is apparently what SEO guys have instead of equilibrium. I didn't take it personally, but it didn't do anything to change my mind either. SEO may be the best example, by which I mean the worst example, of what happens when you uncouple art from promotion. It reduces the thing itself, the work product, to a pure commodity. And when you do that, considerations like quality go straight out the window, because you're not creating for yourself anymore. You're not measuring success against your own inner voice, the one that says, hey, maybe it'd be neat if you put this thing here and move that thing over there. Try that. Do you like it? Does it make you feel something? Instead, you're creating for some amorphous idea of what the market will bear, and that's a mug's game, because the market is a constantly shifting sea. A long time ago, when I was a freelance magazine writer, I learned not to accept any job purely for the money. And let me be clear, there were times when I needed the money, because if I didn't have that animating spark of connection with the material, if I wasn't coupled to it in some way that went beyond what it could do for me or get me, the writing would, in very short order, become pure misery. This was a lesson that came hard in the learning, but I learned it. I don't want to come across like some starry-eyed hippie here. I like being compensated for my work, as even a cursory glance at the material comforts I enjoy will tell you. And it's certainly possible I enjoyed a privilege, which was to be well established enough in my trade that I didn't have to look at every possible job as life or death. And yet, let's back up a second. Remember when I suggested in my last segment that the only people who can afford to turn up their noses at self-promotion are ones who are already so successful that they don't need it? I've been thinking about that. I'm not so sure it's true. You go to pro wrestling when you're looking to make a point. I go to Bruce Springsteen. So join me in Jungle Land for a few moments, won't you? It'd be hard to argue that Springsteen isn't at the pinnacle of commercial success in his field. But he's also an artist who, after years of Olympian reserve and scarcity, now energetically self-promotes. As I write this, he's on tour, and every day as the show is being loaded out, Springsteen pops up on social media with a goofy little video message for the folks at the next stop.
We're coming to get you now. First show in Wales, and we are going to rock you into the ground.
These little clips are fun to watch, sure. But there's more to it than that. They're effective, because
because they resonate with the same values Springsteen brings to the concert stage. They evangelize for fun, for purpose, for community. They're not out there to troll for engagement at any cost. They ride to town on the back of the real engagement, which is the bond Springsteen makes via his music with his audience. This isn't just good self-promotion. It's the best kind of self-promotion because it lands and it sticks. And why does it do that? Because it's true. It's real. It's showing the audience something they can't get in his music, but which feels completely authentic and accessible to anyone who likes his music because it springs from the same waters. I guess what I'm saying is, good self-promotion is inseparable from the art it promotes because it comes out of the same place and honors the same values. If you can do that, you'll reach people. And if you can't, I guess you can always become an SEO consultant. I'll talk to you next time. Bill.
Dear Bill, your interaction with the hurt feelings of an SEO guru reminds me of the time I had a gig in Belfast, on the way to which the airline's outsourced luggage transit company, the beautifully named Ground Care Solutions, lost my bags. I wrote a snarky little blog about it, which, within a day or so, caused me to receive an email from Ground Care Solutions saying that they thought it was unfair and rude and could I please take it down. This, of course, caused me, in turn, to not only not take it down, but to write a second blog post about how maybe if Ground Care Solutions spent less time Googling Ground Care Solutions and more time looking for my luggage, we wouldn't have had this problem in the first place. That second post, by the way, was titled Ground Care Solutions, Ground Care Solutions, Ground Care Solutions, to ensure that they'd find it. My own little touch of SEO there. In regard to the rest of your segment, yes, I agree completely. I'll talk to you soon. Okay, fine. The interesting thing, of course, about being a professional creative, someone who makes money from the damn thing, is the balance between making and doing stuff that feels creative and making and doing stuff that feels professional. By which I mean the balance between what satisfies you as an artist and what pays the rent and keeps you in notebooks. We've talked about this before. For me, the challenge and the fun is in that compromise, the trade-off and the brigadoonish sweet spot of finding something that hits both parts equally. And you can't do this if you're also thinking about things like SEO. The world is too big and too constantly changing to have a secret cheat code that will make something appeal to everyone. SEO is a waste of time. It's pandering to a cloud. I have done jobs for the money. I'm an atheist, but I once took £300 to juggle next to the presenter of BBC's Sunday afternoon religious slot Songs of Praise. I'm not proud of that, but I was broke as hell, so, you know, don't hate the player, hate the game. I still sometimes do gigs purely for the money. Well, actually, that's not quite true. I take gigs sometimes mostly for the money, if the money is good enough. And there are limits to who I'll work for. These days, I can afford to not be on Songs of Praise and wouldn't be. But also, there's some perverse pleasure from taking a well-paid but oddly challenging gig and trying to solve the problem of how to get out of it with my pride and soul undamaged. There has to be some good reason to do stuff like that, right? There's an advert that pops up every so often on a mobile phone game that I am chemically addicted to. It's an advert for another, different mobile phone game, and the ad stars Simon Cowell. It's a shitty ad. He's just looking to someone off camera saying he'll be on set after he's finished playing the game because it's so great. And I can't quite get my head around why he did it. I mean, he's got enough money to heat his mansion by burning cash and still not make a dent in his fortune. He's not in need of exposure. My God, is he not in need of exposure. And the ad is of no artistic merit whatsoever. No wit, no style, no nothing. It's mind-boggling. I love that Bruce Springsteen post. It's so perfect. It shows us this travelling band of fun, roguish troubadours mucking around backstage, which is, of course, the image he wants us to have of them, but also, as you say, probably the truth. At this point in his career, he wouldn't tour if it wasn't one of his favourite things to do, I'm guessing. I'm currently on tour as the guest act with a large-scale burlesque show, and it reminded me of something we did in the dressing room a few shows back. One of the performers set up her phone and suggested we all do one of those choreographed TikTok dance things. I think the thought was that it would look cool. What ended up being posted was a bunch of giggling showgirls getting the steps wrong in seven different ways, while a magician fell into his own suitcase, and then me stepping into frame at the end, shaking my head, being sardonic and ignoring it all. It wasn't in any way slick or cool, but it was very funny and completely real. Authenticity is the key to every part of the creative life, from what medium you choose to create in, all the way to how and if you sell the end product. If you're an artist, then part of your job, I think, is to infuse everything with artistry, from the first line drawn on the canvas to the choice of frame for the finished work. It's all art, all of it, if you're doing it right. Or if you're doing it wrong too, sometimes, I guess. I mean, clickbait is still creative writing, right? I usually have a bit here where I prompt your next segment, but I genuinely can't think of anything. Uh-oh. Anyway, talk to you soon. Matt.
Dear Matt, can I tell you something? If I'd happened to be in the UK and idly flipping around the dial some Sunday morning, and I came across you juggling in the same frame as some Tweety vicar out of a Monty Python sketch, I would have converted to Anglicanism right then and there. I mean, I would have instantly renounced the faith of my forebears, the faith for which some of them literally outran Cossacks, because knowing nothing else about the Church of England, which I don't, I would have figured any faith that involved juggling had to be the faith for me. Also, Ground Care Solutions may be the platonic ideal of an august-sounding but totally meaningless company name. It doesn't tell you anything about what it purports to do, so you can never possibly claim to be disappointed in its product. It lost your bags? Of course it lost your bags. A good rule of thumb is that any company with the word solutions in its name will solve precisely nothing. A good corollary to this is that any company with the word concepts in its name might as well be an empty storefront in a dying strip mall for all the conceptual good it will do you, and in fact, it probably is. But I digress. If I had to reduce your thoughts to an easy-to-digest nugget, and two things, one, who doesn't love that, and two, the last nugget I had was anything but easily digestible. If I had to, it would be, if you're going to be an artist in everything you do, including the stuff you do to draw attention to your art. This seems to me inarguable, although difficult to achieve. But I do know that it's possible, because since COVID, which is the period that more or less corresponds with our getting to know each other, I watched you make videos, shoot photos, write prose, and yes, co-produce a podcast, all of which are nominally done in the service of promoting your main hustle, which is cabaret, but all of which are also, in and of themselves, art. It helps to be polymorphously talented, but here's the thing. It isn't actually essential. Here's where I think we can come down, finally, on self-promotion. If you want to make it good, and not just something that adheres like a limpet to whatever hull everybody else is clamped onto right at the moment, bring to your self-promotion the same energy and the same values you bring to the thing you're promoting. Make it true. Make it real. Make it sing. Make it, at the end of the road, you. Make the thing only you can make. Then go out and tell people as only you can. I'll talk to you next time. Bill. Imagination and Junk is written by Bill Barol in the U.S. and Matt Ricardo in the U.K. with audio production by Bill Barol. For more information, show notes, and bonus content, it's imaginationandjunk.com.